Beginners, beginners call, ladies and gentlemen. Beginners, please.
Herdman, how are we doing?
Oh, if it appears to be ready for curtain up, sir.
Appears to be. This isn't just any old first night, you know, Herdman. It's the first night of my Christmas season. My make or break Christmas season.
Sir Charles, you need have no worries. This is a cracker of a season that you've put together. Well, look at tonight. Trelawney, a good old-fashioned love story with Mr. Nigel Stock, Miss Joyce Carey, Mr. Gary Bond, Mr. James Telfer, Miss Dillis Lay, and Miss Anne Mackay as Rose Trelawney, to mention but a few. You can't go wrong with a bit like that.
I suppose you're right, Herman.
Now, if you'll excuse me, beginners are ready. The front of house manager's just given me the nod. You can make your announcement now, Sir Charles.
Take the curtains out, if you please, Mr. Marlowe.
Curtains out. They're lively. Bit thin in the circle, though. My lords, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Wells Theatre, where it is with great pleasure and not a little humility that I, Sir Charles Crawford, am proud to announce Trelawney, a musical play adapted from Sir Arthur Wing Pinero's Commedietta Trelawney of the Wells by Mr. Aubrey Woods and Mr. Julian Slade. Allow me, if you will, the indulgence of setting the scene. The year is 1864. The story commences at the Sadler's Wells Theatre, where Mr. James Telfer's presentation of The Peddler of Marseille has just drawn to a conclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Grayson.
Thank you.
General of the orchestra.
Good night.
All out up there in the gallery, Barker.
All out, Mr. Mossop.
All out down there in the stalls, Albert.
Yeah, all except the gent over there, Mr. Mossop.
Over where? Yeah, oh. Oh, good evening, Mr. Gower.
Sir.
It is Mr. Gower, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed, Mr. Mossop. It is I.
Come on up, sir. Come off the stage.
Okay, right.
Now, mind your footing.
Yes, yes, yes.
There ain't no handrail.
No, so I see. Thank you. Are you quite sure I shan't be in the way?
God bless you. No, sir. There wouldn't be no part if it weren't for you, Mr. Gower.
No.
We don't lose a Rose Trelawney every night of the year. Take your tabs out, Briggs.
Tops out, Mr. Mossop.
This way, sir. Never been on the stage of the Wells before, sir?
No, never. It all appears very different from down there.
Ah, the magic of the footlights, Mr. Gower.
Ah, yes, yes, of course. Mr. Mossop.
Yes?
I realise that Mr. Telfer may be persuaded to make a brief speech after the supper tonight.
Very little persuading needed there, sir.
No. I was only hoping that I would not be expected to follow his example, as Miss Rose's future husband, I mean.
You never can tell, sir.
Oh, dear. I fear I should be a laughing stock.
Oh, pull yourself together, sir.
I beg your pardon?
Oh, pull yourself together. Pull yourself together. Pull yourself together for the great event. Now that Miss Trelawney is to leave these portals, much preferring you, sir, to us lesser mortals, you should have the confidence to silence chortles if you are called on to speak this evening.
Oh, I do hope I won't be.
All I'm saying, sir, if it should happen, you must pull yourself together. Pull yourself together. Speaking should come easy to a true blue gent. Here's me lady wife, whom I believe you know, sir.
I'm the one that used to kiss your lovely nose, sir. Now that the darling is leaving, well, that's how we go, sir. She really was a splendid pro.
But now it's our farewell show for Rose.
It's all for Rose, my darling Rose.
Rebecca!
my loved one.
Paul, go along with you, Mr. Wrench. Don't you face the forward. Not in front of Mr. Gower, here.
Ah, the lucky man himself.
So you were in front for our performance at the Pedler of Marseille tonight?
Oh, of course, Mr. Wrench. How many times does that make, Mr. Gower?
14. I'm only sorry that I shall never see Rose on the stage again.
Oh, don't, sir. Don't say that. You'll have her at your side for the rest of your life, but we shall have lost her forever.
Pull yourself together. Pull yourself together. Quell your lamentations till the proper time. Everybody knows you have a great big heart, dear.
There's no need to stop it at before we stop, dear.
Hecuba was charming, but it's not your part, dear.
Save all your sorrows and sighs for later.
Clear for us to enter. Yes, we move to center. Loaded up with little
heads with minds sublime.
May I introduce you, sir, to Gad and Colpoint.
Ever your obedience. But who is this noise?
That's Mr. Arthur Gower.
Well, blow him a kiss, boys.
How can the fellow think so low?
When this is a farewell show for Rose.
It all for Rose, my darling Rose.
Mr. Gadd is our leading juvenile man.
Oh, yes, indeed.
And Mr. Colpoise, our low comedian.
How do you do?
I'm hitting them hard this season, Mr. Gower. Tomorrow night, Romeo. They're simply waiting for my Romeo.
Yeah, they'd have to be simple to wait for that.
I beg your pardon.
I said they'd have to be simple
Colpoise
to wait.
Colpoise nearly as funny as he was last year, Mr. Gower. Everybody's saying so.
Really, yes.
We want a new low comedian badly.
Oh, what have I let myself in for? I could never make a speech to people like these.
Though near the stage I often been, now I'm on it, I must say, the stage presents a different scene that's not at all like any play. It takes my breath, I'm scared to death, and but for my roles I would run away.
Oh, look, sir, here comes our manager, Mr. Kilfer, and he's won.
I bid you welcome, my wife, the smile of Sylvester. God rest her, and God bless her. Bid you welcome,
our people,
bid you welcome. These alert boards, you'll realize the tradition
that Rose will leave behind her in the marital condition. Betterton,
Eric,
King,
McCready,
Tullifon.
Yes, indeed, to name but a few. The hand of this gracious
bird to you, Mr. Gower, to you.
Pull yourselves together. Pull yourselves together.
Get the table ready and the pets away.
Make the stage presentable and in good order.
Play all the bits and pieces and remove that border.
Remove the mistrelony,
we can well afford a
body that's worthy of such an actress.
This is a farewell song.
attention, pray. Let us, mummers all, quit the stage and leave it in the hands of those who will transform it into a banqueting hall for our dear departing. When all is prepared, we shall descend from our tiring rooms and partake of the cold collation. Come, my dear.
I will do, sir.
If you'll place yourself in my hands, Mr. Gower, I'll find you somewhere to hide until the celebrations.
Thank you, Mr. Mossop.
Aren't you off to change into your finery then, Mr. Wrench?
But I have changed, sweet Mossop.
Oh. Oh. And very nice you look too, Mr. Wrench.
False, dear Mossop. Kind but false.
Well, I can't stand here all day, you know. I'll have to go and keep Katie over Miss Rose if she's not to come rushing down, poor thing. And spoil a surprise farewell.
Evening, Mrs. Mossop. Excuse me, Mr. Wrench.
Ah, provisions for the feast. Borne aloft by the eminent greengrocer himself.
Just put them on the table if you'd be so kind, Mr. Ablett.
Right, ma'am.
Didn't you see Miss Rose in her last performance, Mr. Ablett?
What do you take me for, Mrs. Mossop? Of course I did. Marrying a non-professional gentleman, they give out, ma'am.
Yeah.
Name of Glover?
Gower.
Grandson of our Chancellor Sir William Gower.
You don't say, ma'am.
He's got no father, no mother, and he lives with the old judge and a great aunt in Cavendish Square.
When is the wedding to be, Mrs. Mossop?
Oh, I don't know, Mr.
Not yet decided. In point of fact, before the distinguished family give a positive seal of approval to the union, Miss Trelawney is to make her home with them for a short term. That's their own expression. To habituate herself to the rarefied atmosphere of the West End. Far from the rotting cabbage leaves we know so well.
Her leaving will make all the difference to the old wells. The season will terminate abrupt. Then the company will be out, Mr. Wrench. Out, sir.
Which will lighten the demand for the spongy turnip and the watery marrow, my poor Ablett.
Yes. Was you in the piece tonight, Mr. Wrench?
As much as I'm ever in any of the pieces in this theatre, yes, I was.
I must have glanced away at that moment. Another small part, I take it, Mr. Wrench.
You take it correctly, Mr. Ablett.
Well, there you are, then.
Ah, well, somebody must play the bad parts of this world on and off stage.
You speak sooth, sweet Mossop. But tell me, shall I disgrace the feast, eh? Is my appearance too scandalously seedy?
Oh, of course not, my dear.
Yes, but Miss Trelawney, do you think she'll regard me as a blot on the banquet? Do you, Becky?
She, no. Don't distress yourself. She'll be far too excited to notice you.
Yes. Now I recollect she has always been that. Thanks, Becky.
Oh, don't mention it. Here, Mr. Ablett, put it at the end of the table. Not there, dear. Tom Wrench! What do you think you're up to? Well, standing there as if tomorrow will do. There's Rose, poor dear, crying her eyes out in the dressing room, and the table's not even laid.
Come on, Mr. Abbott, come along. There's work to be done.
Right.
Have you been crying, Avonia Bunn?
No, Tom Wrench, I haven't. And if I have, I can't help it. Rose and I have chummed together all this season and part of last, and... Oh, it's a hateful profession. The moment you make a friend. You're supposed to be a playwright, Tom. Can't you say something to cheer me up?
Well, my plays never cheer anyone up.
Well, at least bring those chairs over. Come along.
Just a moment while I remove my coat. I don't want to get myself disheveled.
Still anxious to make an impression, even down to the last.
Now, Vonia.
Oh, Tom. It's no good your being sweet on her any longer, surely.
Let us just say I shall miss her as much as you.
We're a fine pair, I must say. There's Rose, only 19 years old, and soon she'll be ordering about her own powdered footman and playing on a grand piano. And what will we be doing?
General utility.
Singing parliament.
Walking gentlemen. Oh, the frustration of it all.
Mm.
Still carrying a spear after 10 years.
Still no name in lights, Tom Wrench.
Still
darning your tights, Tom Wrench.
Still walking on in the same old wig.
The one with the ringlets, oh, that's a pig.
But still it's the time-honored, much-loved rig.
that my friends in the gallery recognize me by.
But you still will write those plays you write?
Still.
Well, one of these days they might.
Oh, yes, they will. But until that day, until I'll be known to the public as that wrenchman, the one who played the messenger, or was it the henchman? I'll be a walking gentleman, walking still, walking on, walking on. This is the life at the bottom of the bill. Years after Rose has gone, I shall be walking on. Walking, walking, listening to talking, walking on still, walking on, walking on. That's how it is when you're runners of the mill. Years after Rose has gone,
years after Rose has
we
gone,
shall be walking on,
we shall be walking,
walking, walking, listening to talking, walking on still. And what about you, Bonia? Things be any better for you in 10 years' time?
I don't expect so, Tom.
Still playing the parlor maid.
Still.
Still getting the table laid.
Still. Still walking on with my cap in place.
A bright little smile lighting up your face.
To show I am naughty and yet great nice. And to make sure that I shall be seen if never.
But you will still have the pantomime.
Still.
That's always been your chance to shine.
And shine I will, but until that day, until I am doomed to be cast as a humble servant, a nothing sort of mumble grumble servant, I'll be a saucy parlourmaid saucing still.
Walking on, walking on, soldiering on, going at it with a will.
Years after Rose has gone, we shall be walking on.
We shall be walking, minding,
minding.
The agony is blinding.
But we shall be walking, listening to talking, walking, 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 walking on still. Not to worry, Tom. We got the panto at the end of the
day. I better go and tell that
wretched. I must go and get my flowers, Mrs. Moffat. I left them on the stage. I'll be a minute.
All right, I'll see you.
Oh, goodbye, dear old Wayne.
Rose?
Oh, Arthur, Arthur, my dearest. Where has everyone gone? I did say goodbye to them all, but I thought...
The carriage will be here soon, Rose.
You better wait at the stage door, then. Forgive me, my love, but I did just want to see them all for the last time.
I know. Come.
I phone you. Now.
Expect us to let you make your last appearance to an empty house, Rose.
Arthur, you knew.
Well,
blessings on you, my child.
Sweet lamb, be happy.
Ladies and gentlemen, fill your glasses. Let the festivities commence.
Well, Rose, a moment's come. Are you nervous?
No, Vonia, I'm not, because I know this is my fate. Mother often used to stare into my face when I was little and whisper, Rosie, I wonder what is to be your fate. Poor mother. Oh, I hope she sees.
Your Arthur's lovely.
No, he's a dear. Very young, of course. But he'll grow manly in time and have moustaches and whiskers out to here, he says.
What luck he saw you in the peddler.
It was the song that sealed my destiny, Arthur declares.
Ever of thee, I'm fondly dreaming.
Oh, do you remember the flowers he sent the next day?
Oh, and his first visit to the stage door. How excited we were.
Of course, I never spoke to him, never even glanced at him. Poor mother brought me up that way, not to speak to anybody, nor look.
Quite right.
I do hope she sees.
Tight your places, please. Ladies and gentlemen, number 8.
Well, God bless you, Rose. I'm afraid I couldn't give up the stage. Not for all the Arthurs.
Ah, but your mother wasn't an actress.
No.
No, mine was. And I remember her saying to me once, Rose, if ever a good man comes along and offers to marry you and take you off the stage, seize the chance. Get out of it.
Your mother was never popular, was she?
Yes, indeed she was. Till she grew oldish and lost her looks. Poor mother. Well, I hope she sees.
Ladies and gentlemen, I beg you, be seated. Mr. Trelawney will sit here on my right hand, on my left. My friend, Mr. Gower, will sit.
Oh, Telfer takes the chair, you observe. Now, why he more than myself, for instance?
Oh, he's the oldest man present.
Oh, true. And he's beginning to age in his acting, too. His itches, scarce as pearls.
Hush, Bertie.
And he's losing all his teeth. To act with him makes the house seem half empty.
Mr. Gower, sir, follow the advice of one who has sat at many a good man's feast. Have a little ham.
Oh, thank you, sir. It's really delicious.
Friends, Romans, fellow actors, lend me your ears. We are about to lose, to part with one of our companions.
I detested her at first.
Miss Rose Trelawney. For I will no longer conceal from you that is to her I refer. Ah, but now, what has happened to the expectancy and Rose of the fair state?
Forced.
I will tell you, a man has crossed her path.
Aye.
A man, but also a gentleman, who comes to us and asks us to give him this girl to wife. And friends, we have done so. May they, I can wish them no greater joy, be as happy in their married life as Miss Sylvester and I have been in ours.
Very kind.
Miss Rose Trelawney. Mr. Arthur Garr.
Thank you. Miss Rose Trelawney.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I would I were endowed with Mr. Telford's flow of splendid eloquence. But I am no orator, no speaker, and therefore I cannot tell you how highly, how deeply I appreciate the compliment.
Deserve it, Mr. Glover.
Glover.
I know.
And I trust. Before I bring these observations to a conclusion, let me assure you that it has been a great privilege to me to meet...
sit down.
To have been thrown with...
Get him to sit down.
A band of artists whose talent... whose striking talents... The fame of whose talents, I should say...
Sit down. You finished long ago, dear. Sit down.
Oh, thank you. Oh. I'm exceedingly sorry. I knew I... Oh, good heavens. How wretchedly I've done, Rose. I'm so sorry. I do apologize.
Rose, my child.
Julia, Julia, to the piano forte.
Mr. Telfer, Mrs. Telfer, my friends, boys, ladies and gentlemen. No, don't stop, Fonia. Go on. Let it be my last memory of the well. That song in the peddler. The song which made Arthur fall in love with me.
Sing it for us, Rose.
Yes.
Of you, of all of you, very often, as the song says. And shall I tell you the moments in the future which will be the happiest to me in my life, however happy I may be with Arthur? Why, whenever I find that I am recognized by people and pointed out, people in the pit of a theater, in the street, no matter where, and when I can fancy they're saying to each other, look, that was Miss Trelawney. You remember Trelawney? Trelawney of the West!
Rose, Trelawney of the West. The West wishes you well in your new life among the swells.
Now as you leave the wells, Trelawney, the lights begin to dim.
But if you love the man you are leading us for, then we wish you joy on him. Remembering the joy you gave us when you were our Trelawney. One and only Rose Trelawney.
The carriage is here, sir.
If you have tears, prepare to shed them now. Rose, my dear, your carriage awaits.
Thank you, Mr.
the 16th, 1864. My dear Rose, in the 2 weeks since you left the Wells, a sadder and an emptier place, everything has managed to go on much as usual. Mr. Telfer's courtroom exit as Shylock achieved on Wednesday last the unprecedented length of 2.5 minutes, timed by Mossop and his infallible hunter. Such malevolent glances and such snarls of defiance can, I am certain, never before have been witnessed. I heard Gad remark to Colpoys that it was even longer than his death scene as Richard III, but as Colpoys pointed out, not half as comic. Apart from this ray of rather wintry sunshine, nothing of note has happened to brighten our lives, except that I have started to write yet another play, doomed, I am sure, to moulder with the rest of the rejected manuscripts in my already groaning cupboard. But one of these days, dear Rose, one of these days, I'll show those timorous managers that they are wrong, and that audiences will accept characters that behave like people. For the words I have written will not be declaimed, will not be ranted, will not be sobbed out for the sake of squeezing meaningless applause from an audience that has lived far too long with the cardboard heroes of the Wells. Because, above all, Rose, oh, my dearest Rose, the people in my plays will be alive! Isn't it, Rose?
Quiet. Oh, oh, it is a dreadful half hour after dinner every evening.
Yes. Grandfather and Aunt Trafalgar must wake up soon. They're longer than usual tonight.
Your sister Clara there and Captain De Phoenix.
Yes.
When they were courting, did they have to go through this?
Yes.
And now that they are married, they still endure it?
Yes.
And we, when we are married, Arthur, shall we?
Yes, I suppose so. Oh.
Hark! Hark!
Hush, Miss Prudence.
That's the song I sang in the peddler. The peddler of Marseille. The song that used to make you cry, Arthur.
Yes, I am, my darling.
And then Raphael enters, comes onto the stage. The music continues softly. I sink to my knees before him. Raphael, why have you kept me waiting? Man, do you wish to break my heart? A woman's heart, Raphael.
What a hideous riot, Trafalgar.
Rose, dear, I hope I've been mistaken. But through my sleeper, fancied I could hear you shrieking at the top of your voice.
Trafalgar, it's becoming impossible for you and me to obtain repose. Is that not a street organ?
Undoubtedly. An organ in square at this hour of the evening. Singularly out of place.
Well, does no one stir?
I will go, Grandfather.
What are you upon the floor for, my dear?
Oh, Sir William,
Have we no cheers? Do we lack cheers here, Trafalgar?
My dear Rose, come. This is quite out of place. Young ladies do not crouch and huddle upon the ground. Do they, William?
A moment ago, I should have hazarded the opinion that they did not.
Charles was just running out to stop the organ when I reached the hall, Grandpa.
You've surely no intention, Clara, of venturing yourself into the public street?
Oh,
the open square?
Oh, I meant only to wave at the man from the door.
Oh, Clara, that would hardly have been in place.
In mercy's name, Trafalgar, what is befalling my household?
Oh, my dear brother, I know what is in your mind, but do not despond already. I feel sure that there are good ingredients in Rose's character. In time, William, we shall shape her to be a fitting wife for our rash and unfortunate Arthur.
Thank you,
in
Aunt.
In time, William. In time.
Well. There. At least, my dear sister, I am perfectly aware that I possess in you the woman above all others whose example should compel such a transformation.
Oh, brother, what a compliment.
Yes. Even though my hopes for Rose's translation from her gypsy upbringing to our own sphere are sadly dwindling.
I do wish you wouldn't all talk about me as if I were not here.
That remark was very out of place.
Miss Trelawney, have no fear that we are, any of us, unaware of your presence in this house. Pray, be seated.
Now, Rose, I fear I must perform a disagreeable duty. We know you have a heart that's warm and some degree of beauty. But when it comes to modes and codes and rules of good behavior, it will not do to muddle through relying on what God gave ya. When you speak to a servant, pray be careful to guard the expression on your face. To address a menial with a countenance too genial is quite out of place, is it not?
Quite distressingly out of place. She ought to pay attention to her posture. Her carriage is often a disgrace. And her strange capacity for unwarranted vivacity can come as quite a shock and is so very out of place.
In short, Rose, we realize you're a gypsy with most of the instincts of your race. But to one who's your superior, vagabond hysteria seems quite, wouldn't you say?
Oh, I would.
Am I right?
Indeed, you're right.
It is quite out of place.
Grandfather, perhaps Rose does not fully understand.
Then it is up to you to instruct her.
But, sir, since you have thought it proper for me to lodge with Clara and Captain De Phoenix during Rose's stay in Cavendish Square, we now have no opportunity for confidential conversation. If I might be allowed occasionally to see Rose alone?
Oh, William.
They tell me you come a troubadouring,
sir.
Well, sir, be you tenor, be you bass. These nocturnal frolickings, these merry midnight rollickings, are quite out of place.
are they not?
Irretrievably, I fear, out of place.
What of it if he stands there by the railing to sing
and to glimpse a lovely face?
Well, if you think he's Romeo, then Juliet, I'd have you know your balcony appearances are scarcely quite in place. As for you, sir, your moonlight serenading, make this fiery steed gallop apace. And I tell you categorically, rhetorically, alas, poor Yorickly, these trysts in the night are a blight and are quite, wouldn't you say?
Oh, I would.
Am I right?
Indeed, you're right.
They are quite out of place.
Cord tables, Sir William?
Yes.
Oh, yes, by all means, Charles. A card table as usual. A rubber of whist would comfort you, William. Soothe you.
I hope you're right, my dear sister.
Infamous. Diabolical.
Be calm, Rose, dear, be calm.
Tyrannical. I cannot enjoy it.
They mean well, dearest.
Well.
They are rather old-fashioned people.
Old-fashioned.
They've not many more years in this world.
Nor I at this rate. They are killing me. Oh. Like Agnes in The Spectre of St. Ives.
Oh, yes.
She expires in the fourth act, as I shall die in Cavendish Square, painfully, of no recognized disorder.
Anything we can do to make them happy.
To make the Vice Chancellor happy? I won't try. I will not. She's a fiend. A vampire.
Oh, harsh.
His snuff box.
What?
Rose. I wish I could poison his snuff, as Lucrezia Borgia would have done. She would have removed him within 2 hours of my her arrival. And here he stands and dictates to me. To Miss Trelawney. Oh. Have we no chairs? Do we lack chairs, Herr Traveller?
What's the matter? What have you done?
The table is prepared, William. Arthur, I assume you would prefer to sit and contemplate Rose.
Oh, thank you, Aunt.
Oh, my dear child. Oh, Frederick? Clara?
Are you in pain, dearest?
Agony.
Pinch your upper lip.
This is to be whist, I hope.
Rose, young ladies, do not sneeze quite so continuously.
I will thank you, Captain De Phoenix, to exercise your intelligence this evening to its furthest limit.
I'll try, sir.
Last night, sir.
Oh, Frederick had toothache last night, Grandpa.
Whist is whist, Clara, and toothache is toothache.
Yes, Grandpa.
We will endeavor to keep the two things distinct, if you please.
Your interruption was hardly in place, Clara, dear. Oh.
Eh? What?
A misdeal.
Oh, Frederick.
Captain De Phoenix.
I'm frightfully grieved, sir.
Oh. Is this whist, may I ask, Miss Trelawney?
I'm sorry, William.
I fear this is no longer a comfortable home for you, Trafalgar. No longer the home for a gentlewoman. I apprehend that in these days my house approaches somewhat closely to a pandemonium. And this is whist. Whist!
Miss Trelawney, how could you do anything so out of place?
Oh, but I cannot help it, Miss Gower.
You are acquainted with the rules of this household. No untoward noise when the Vice-Chancellor is at cards.
But they are such ridiculous rules.
Oh, for shame.
You see, Aunt, Rose is young, and you make no allowance for her. Give her no chance.
Great heaven! What is this you are charging me with?
I don't think the rules of this house are fair to Rose. Oh, I must say it. They are horribly unfair.
Oh, brother.
Trafalgar. Oh, indeed, sir. And so you deliberately accuse your great aunt of acting towards ye and Miss Trelawney mala fide?
Grandfather, what I intended to say...
I will afford ye the opportunity of explaining what he intended to convey. Downstairs. At once. in the library.
Yes, sir.
Oblige me by following me, sir. Captain De Phoenix.
Sir.
I see no prospect of any further social relaxation this evening. You and Clara will do me the favor of attending in the hall, in readiness to take this young man back to Holland Street. Come, my dear sister.
Oh, brother.
Good night, dearest. Oh, Rose.
Mr. Arthur Gower.
I am coming, sir.
Oh, I will.
Can you defeat it?
I'm coming, sir. I may not cough, I may not sneeze, I may not move, I have to freeze, but they'll not bathe me to my knees, they'll find I'm more than a match for them. I may not stoop, I may not bend, I may not even see a friend, but I shall show that I intend to do whatever the rules condemn. On these restrictions, these rocks and these frictions, I pour maledictions and sing. They won't let me dance, they won't let me sing, and soon they won't even let me breathe.
What a hideous riot, Travelger.
Rose, dear, I hope I have been mistaken, but through my sleep I thought I heard you shrieking at the top of your voice. Leave her up there and fondly dreaming. I may not laugh, I may not joke, I may not speak above a croak, and when I eat, I almost choke to think I'm watched by that pair of ghouls. If I'm a gypsy, then let me get tipsy and show these entangled fools what I think of their own outmoded cold corroding rules. Rules, 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 rules!
Yes, Charles?
I see Sir William and the rest descend the stairs. I've been waiting the chance to end this missive, Miss Rose.
Oh, it's damp.
Yes, miss. A gentle shower had been taking place outside. Ink spots, cook says.
It's from some of my friends.
Oh, a professional, Miss Rose?
Yes, yes.
I observed them lolling against the square railings, examining her premises, and they ventured for to beckon me. An extremely affable party, miss. One of them caused me to laugh.
They want to speak to me, to impart something to me of an important nature. Oh, Charles, when Sir William and Miss Gower have retired, do you think you could let me go forth and grant my friends a hurried interview?
Certainly, miss.
If it reached the ears of Sir William and Miss Gower, you would lose your place, Charles.
I am aware, miss, but Sir William was extremely rude to me during dinner over that mishap to the entree.
Oh, my friends, my poor friends.
Oh, really, I should hardly advise you to venture out, miss.
Out? No. Oh, but get them in.
In, Miss Rose? Indoors?
Under cover. Are you the only one up?
I believe so, miss. Anyhow, the women and servants is quite under my control.
Then tell my friends to be deathly quiet and to creep, to tiptoe.
Yes, miss.
Make haste. Oh, my friends. My friends, the dears, the darlings, the faithful creatures.
I discovered them, just in the doorway.
Bonia!
Oh, ducky, ducky, ducky. Oh, what a stone!
What a wit you are!
Oh, Ferdinand!
My love, my life! Oh,
she's
come.
Oh, it's a shame to come down on you in this way, but they would do it, and I thought I'd better stick to them.
Oh, I shall remember this accursed evening.
Look, you must be quiet. Everyone has gone to bed, and I'm not sure I'm allowed to receive visitors.
Oh, and we are intruders?
I mean such late visitors. Oh, yes, it is late. But I so wanted to tell you.
Tell me what?
Well, allow me to introduce my husband, Mr. Ferdinand Gadd.
Oh, Ferdinand.
Oh, wonderful. You are lucky. We must drink to your health.
Oh, yes.
Yes, I think there's some wine over there. Will you take some wine, Ferdinand?
I thank you. Anything. Anything.
Anything that goes with stout here.
Sherry?
Oh, yes.
Tom, would you?
No, thank you. The fact is, we have already partaken of refreshments once or twice during the evening.
Ladies and gentlemen, the bride.
The bride.
My bride.
Well, Rose, my darling, we've been talking about nothing but ourselves. How are you getting along here?
Getting along? Oh, I don't fancy I'm getting along very well, thank you.
No?
Poor Arthur is a dear.
But the Gowers, the very mention of them makes something go tap, tap, tap at the top of my head.
I may not cough, I may not sneeze, I may not move, I have to freeze. But they'll not beat me to my knees, they'll find I'm more than a match for them.
Oh, my poor darling.
With grandfather snarling.
And aunt going tap in your brain.
How could you be done? We're so glad to come. Besides, we're all of that beastly rain.
You're with your friends.
My dear, dear friends.
We'll cheer you up.
We'll make amends.
Each class dismissed. The lesson ends.
In what is surely the worst of schools.
Come on, you gypsy. Let's help you, you gypsy. And show these cantankerous folks what we think of now. Money, money, make you money.
Who are these persons?
Some of my friends who used to be at the Wells with me who have called to inquire how I am getting on.
Rose, what is this?
I can answer your question, sir. Some friends of that young woman's connected with the playhouse have favored us with a visit for the purpose of ascertaining how she is getting on. In short, a drunken debauch.
Oh, oh,
so you see, gentlemen, and you, madam, and you, sir, you see, all of you, exactly how Mr. Lawley is getting on. Begone!
Oh.
A set of garish, dissolute gypsies.
Oh,
begone!
Where's my umbrella?
And with my cloak.
Come on, London artists!
We don't want to remain where we're not heartily welcome, I can assure everybody.
Open the windows! Let it air!
Well, goodbye, Rose.
No, no, Vonia. Yeah. Oh, don't leave me.
Rose?
I'm very sorry, Arthur. Indeed, I'm very sorry, Sir William. But you were right. Gypsies. Gypsies. Yes, Arthur. If you were a gypsy as I am, as these friends of mine are, we might be happy together. But I've seen enough of your life, my dear boy, to know that I am no wife for you.
But you can't.
I should only be wretched and make you wretched. And the end, when it arrived, as it very soon would be much as it is tonight.
You'll let me see you, talk to you tomorrow, Rose?
No, never.
You mean that?
Oh, don't be afraid, Sir William. I give you my word.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Gower. What?
Come and see me tomorrow.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I'm ready.
Rose, where will you go?
Back to the Wells, Arthur. Back to the Wells.
Oh!
Roll out the carpet. Ring out the bells.
Trelawney is returning home to the dear old well.
All in the morning papers, ever the end I tell, that Trelawney's going back to the dear old well. Back to the well goes round. He's going back to the well with her. Dear old come to appreciate her. He's going home to the road to the end of her. Oh, God, he's and a little later. Back to the old well.
Rose, have I lost you? Oh, my dearest, did I really mean so little to you? I believed that you loved me, but now you've left me. Where shall I go? What shall I do? I shall be lonely, oh, so lonely, leaving only on my memories of you. I believe that you loved me, but now you've left me. Where shall I go? What shall I do?
With the opening. Curtain up. Enter the Emperor. Up, center, resplendent.
Very well, Mr. Delbert. Orchestra ready, Mr. Grayson?
Yes, yes, indeed, Mr. Morser.
Right, Briggs?
Yes, Mr. Morser.
Take the curtain out.
Music. Now is the winter of our discontent, but no, I do not offer you Shakespearean show. Each year at Christmastide the world's affords the finest pantomime upon the boards. But hush, good minstrels, play at once begin, transport us one and all to old Pekin. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Grayson, gentlemen of the orchestra. That will do, Marsha. We will recommence.
Fire to the winds!
We will recommence in 10 minutes with the wedding scene.
Right, Mr. Telford.
Albert!
Dad!
Call the wedding scene in 10 minutes.
Wait for Miss Mother. Wedding scene in 10 minutes.
What's that? Mr. Telford! Albert! The flowers we ordered for Miss Rose have arrived.
How is she then?
Oh, she's a little down, poor thing. Oh. Misses that young Arthur more than she'll admit.
She'll soon be herself again, now that she's back at the Wells.
I knew she'd never be happy with that oichy-toichy West End lot. She belongs with her old friends, does Rose. Old friends is true friends. Friends who stand the test.
You never know with new friends. Old friends is best.
Cause old friends is true friends. Far above the rest.
You never know with new friends.
Old friends is best. They'll be there when you want them. You cry for help, they will lead.
They'll stand by when you need them.
Come in.
And a friend.
Thank you, my dear, dear friend.
Ah. come along, you lot. Up you go. What? The wedding's staying in 10 minutes. Go on.
The flowers are lovely, Mrs. Moffat.
Well, we thought you might like them. Now, I'll put your finale change out ready for after the wedding scene. There's still a hook or two to sew on the bodice, but it'll be all right as long as you don't breathe too hard. And I'll finish it tomorrow.
Oh, thank you, dear Mrs. Moffat. I'm sorry if I haven't been a very jolly person since I came back to the well.
There, dearie. Don't you worry your head about anything. It'll all come out all right in the end. Oh, it's nice to have some flowers in the dressing room again. Back in a minute, dearie.
Bye.
Everything around me is the same, but not the same. I'd know this chair anywhere, and those curtains were there when I first came. But everything to blame if the life I had worn I was born for seems now not the same.
Miss Trelawney.
Come in.
Your pot basket, Miss Trelawney.
Thank you, Albert. Put it over there, will you?
Right, miss. There. Oh, it's nice to have you back at the Wells, Miss Rose. It wasn't the same here without you.
Thank you, Albert.
Wedding scene in 10 minutes, please.
Everything I sing seems a reproach to me and to my shame. I am finding the world I believe is not the same. This world isn't the world, it's merely a world and half unreal. And I'm like a doll, like a marionette, attempting to feel what I can no longer feel. For everything around me that once excited me seems now so lame, and the world that I once was in love with may stay the same, but all the same, without my Arthur beside me, it's not the same.
Oh,
Come in.
Miss Rose Trelawney.
Avonia.
May I have the inestimable pleasure of introducing you to Mr. Thomas Wrench in his latest role, Fearless the Dragon. Priceless Rose. They put the eyes so far down it can't see a thing. Turn again, Fearless.
Oh, it's impossible, William. Quite impossible. I shall tell Telfer that unless I can have my eyes in a reasonable place, I shall refuse to appear.
Tom, I'm sorry.
Oh, Rose. I knew I'd miss something all those weeks you were away from us. Sympathy, Bony, of a helping hand stretched out.
Rose, I was wondering whether you'd lend me that belt you bought for Ophelia to wear during the pantomime.
I will make you a present of the belt, Vonia, if you will accept it.
Oh, no.
I bought it when I came back to the well, thinking everything would go on as before. But now...
What, love?
They tell me that I cannot act effectively any longer.
Effectively?
First, they reduce my salary, and now Mr. Telfer has cut down my part.
Oh, no.
No.
Poor mother. I hope she doesn't see.
You've lost the trick of it, that's all. You'll get it back again.
Oh, I will, Vonia. I know I will. I must.
Of course you will, ducky.
But I'm frightened, Tom. Whenever I'm called on stage, even to rehearse, I feel sick with fright. And I begin to think that one day I shan't be able to go on ever again. Oh, Vonia.
Oh, that sounds like Ferdy.
Ferdy, thank you well, darling.
Oh, now what's put Ferdy out?
Anything wrong, Dad? Wrong! What do you think?
Tell us then.
I have been asked to appear in the pantomime.
Oh, Ferdy, you...
I, a serious actor, if ever there was one. The poetic actor.
What part,
the
Ferdy?
The insult, the bitter insult, the gross indignity. I simply looked at Telfer when he preferred his request and swept from the stage.
What part, Ferdy?
Eh?
What part?
A character called... The Demon of Discontent.
Oh, no. Don't laugh, Tom. It's a rotten part. You won't play it, darling.
Play it? I would see the wells in ashes first.
We shall lose our places, Ferdy. We shall be out, both of us.
Of course we shall. Do you think I have not counted the cost?
Who is it?
Is that there, Mr. Lowley?
Yes.
Oh, I want to see him.
Wrench? I'll trouble you. Ask Mr. Conpoys whether he approaches me as a friend, an acquaintance, or the tool of Telfer.
He is here as the tool of Telfer.
I will receive him.
Ah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Telfer instructs me to offer you this part in the pantomime, The Demon of Discontent.
Pshaw!
Oh, you refuse it.
I do more. I dash the unworthy role to the ground, thus. Oh. Acquaint Mr. Telfer with my decision, and add that I hope his pantomime will prove an utterly mirthless one.
I see. Then Mr. Telfer further instructs me to deliver this.
What is it?
Your notice.
Oh, oh, no.
I leave. The Romeo. The Orlando. Leave.
Oh, what, Ferdy? Now, this ain't so bad. Listen. I'm discontent from Orkney's Isle to Dover. To make men's bile bile over, I in Dover.
Oh, Vonia. Hand it to me. No, that's not bad. Tempers, though sweet, I whip up to a lather. Make wives hate husbands, sons wish fathers.
father. Ha, 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 Vernia. There's something to lay hold of here. I'll think this over. Gus?
Yeah?
I've thought this over. I play it.
Oh, Ferdy.
Oh, Ferdinand. I wish I had your courage.
Courage?
She's got the most awful stage fright.
What, Rose? Never.
It's true, Augusta.
Nonsense. Never let it be said that a Wells artiste would disappoint the public. Follow Ferdy's example, my dear. They're waiting for my demon. I shall give it for them.
They're waiting for my Twankie. I shall give it for them. For us poor fools who once decide to enter this profession, however we may feel inside, there's no room for depression.
So be we actor,
juggler,
clown,
magician,
singer,
dancer.
We cannot let our party go. And when it calls, we answer.
We can't keep awaiting. We can't keep awaiting. We're sitting there expectantly with hearts of palpitating. They're dying for my demon, the one they love to hate. They're crying for my Twankie to blow them all a kiss. Waiting for the moment when we get town and we can't let our public down. We can't keep waiting, we can't keep waiting. It's selfish to withhold ourselves when we're so fascinating. They're screaming for my demon to scare them till it hurts.
They're dreaming of my Frankie removing 30 cents.
Waiting for the moment when we get town and we can't let our public down. Oh dear, Rose, in this life you chose, you must go it.
Will you know it?
Or be gone.
Gallantly concealing.
The makeup that is peeling.
Though your blood may be congealing at the fraud and double dealing.
And you'd like to hit the ceiling over somebody seen stealing.
You must rise above the
chitter.
It's a matter of feeling that feeling
when the cold boys come.
You're
cool, Miss Trelawney.
You're on.
Then you can't keep them waiting. You can't keep them waiting. Your name is on the program in the bonus contemplating.
They're waiting for my demon to crash his fearful crown.
They're waiting for my Twankie to hoist a gingham gown. What?
Supplicating for your princess to don her golden crown.
Waiting for the moment when we hit town and we can't let our public down. They want us and we can't.
No, we
Oh, thank heavens for Ferdy and Gus. Now Rosa will be able to show them that it isn't true.
What?
But she is no longer able to act effectively. These fools of the Wells. Why, her broken engagement to poor young Gar has really been the making of her. It has transformed her. Can't act, can't she? How she will play Dora in my comedy.
Oh, that comedy.
Do you know, Vernia? I had Rose in mind when I imagined Dora.
You astonish me.
And Arthur Gar when I wrote the character of Gerald, Dora's lover. Gerald and Dora, Rose and Arthur. Vernia, oh, I wish you could keep a secret.
A secret, Tom?
I should like to share it with you because you are fond of her too.
Ah.
But there I can't trust you.
Tom Rain.
No, you're a warm-hearted woman, Vernia, but you're a sieve.
I swear, by all the hopes of hitting them as Aladdin in the coming pantomime, I swear I will not divulge, let alone tell a living soul, any secret you may entrust to me or let me know of concerning Rose Trelawney of the Wells Amen.
Vernia, I know where Arthur Gower is.
Is? Isn't he in London?
No. Before we were all thrown out of Cavendish Square that night, I told him to come and see me, and I made him realize that the only way to win Rose back was to become part of her world. So that very afternoon, he packed his bags, burnt his boats, and went down to Bristol.
To Bristol?
To the Theatre Royal.
To the Theatre Royal?
And joined the company as a walking gentleman.
A walking gentleman?
If you insist on repeating every word I say, I shall not tell you the end of the story.
Sorry.
Thank you. Now, where was I?
A walking gentleman.
Ah, yes. Stage name Arthur Gordon. So now his one ambition is to become a great actor and win back the heart of the girl he loves. There. Well, what do you think of that?
Oh, Tom. I must tell Rose.
But woman, don't you dare.
But when is she to know?
When he begins to make strides.
Well, I hope he makes them quickly. I don't know how long Rose can carry on without him. Do go away and leave me alone, Tom. I'll be off if you go on gossiping like this.
Sorry.
And don't let her see that long face of yours. She'll need all the smiles around her we can find if she's going to get through this pantomime. You mark my words.
Fear not, Volia. I'll have my smile ready. What about you?
Oh, don't you worry about me. I'm always stark mad when the pantomime comes round. Once I put on these tights, and the doublet with the spangles, and the hat with the ostrich feathers. Oh, just look at it, Tom. Oh, I often think my year must start at a different time from everybody else's. I only really wake up in the winter.
When the spring has gone, and the summer's gone, and the autumn's halfway through, and the winter is approaching, I say to myself, ooh, now is the hour, now is the time, when I'm in my element, I'm in my prime, and the boring straits must find other dates, and recognize that I'm the one who's really needed for the Christmas pantomime. Then comes my turn, for which I yearn, when I justify what little I earn, when the serious work of the year is done, and the season has come for a bit of fun. Why then, it's the turn of the Volia bun. Of the Volia bun. As I pin the last sequin, I sincerely bless the business I'm in, as I get myself ready to punch each pun, and to shine like the rays of the morning sun. I'm ripe for the turn of the Volia bun. Of the Volia bun. Then it's on with the spangles, on with the bangles, on with the feathers at curious angles. Finally my walk down the shades of begonia, capsulose, tight-wrist, pneumonia. But when I hear them shout, Avonia! Comes this theatre hums, and you won't catch people twiddling their thumbs, for they know there is one who is bound to stun, and they say to themselves as they pay them on, at last, it's the turn of Avonia bun, of Avonia bun.
Miss Bunn, Mr. Riggs, you're on.
Oh, oh my God, no. I knew it. Oh. Come on, Tom, don't forget your dragon.
What noise assails me ears?
A dragon, sire. See, he approaches.
I think I'll retire.
Fear not. Don't hide. The dragon is my friend. For though my journeys did drag on no end, he was as faithful to me night and day as I to my princess will always stay.
And true to you, Aladdin, I will be. My thoughts, my hopes, my dreams are all of thee.
Ever of thee I'm fondly dreaming. Dreaming of thee, my heart takes wing. Under the moon so palely gleaming, ever of thee I love to sing. Singing of thee I most adore.
Stop! Stop! Now, what is the matter, Rose?
It's a song, Mr. Telfer.
It has been the song ever since we started rehearsals.
But it's so inappropriate. Couldn't we please cut it out of the scene?
Cut it out?
It's not real. It's not lifelike.
I don't understand you young people. I really don't. This isn't meant to be life. This is the theatre.
But, Mr. Telford, surely the theatre, even the pantomime, should try to be like life in some way.
I'm not aware of having begged your opinion, Wrench.
Perhaps not, Mr. Telford, but Rose is right.
And I am wrong.
Yes. I believe the theatre should hold, as t'were, the mirror up to nature as Hamlet.
I know, me bard. Thank you, Wrench.
Well, of course, but can't you see that Rose is miserable?
Tom, please. Mr. Telford, I can't sing this song. Not like this. Not in a pantomime. You must let me change it.
Miss Trelawney, I am not accustomed to being told what I must and must not do in my own theatre. Will you or will you not rehearse and perform this pantomime as I direct you?
It is not that I will not, Mr. Telfer. I cannot.
Then there is no longer a place for you here at the Wells.
Mr. Telfer, you can't.
And I would remind you, Rafe, that your services are by no means indispensable. I'm having enough trouble with declining audiences as it is. The sword of Damocles hangs all this theatre and all Miss Sylvester's future and my future therein, if the truth to be told. So, Miss Trelawney, you will hand over your part to Miss Pilat forthwith. That she will treat the theatre with the respect and devotion you seem unwilling to accord it.
But I...
That will be all, Miss Trelawney. We will continue rehearsal in 20 minutes. Ah, Violet, do you think I was too hasty? Rose is the most popular performer I know, worth 50 seats at a performance in the right row.
You could not have done otherwise, James. You could not allow the child to dictate to you, not on your own stage.
I fear it may not be ours much longer, my dear.
James?
Burrow spoke to me today on behalf of the owners. Unless we manage to show a greater profit, he threatens to put another actor manager into the old Wells.
Have they no respect for your knowledge of the theatre?
The theatre? They don't know what the word means, Violet. No. Don't know what it means. No.
Oh, Tom. I feel so awful. How to have stood up for her.
No, Vernia, it wasn't your battle.
It wasn't yours, but you took her part. You didn't need to.
Oh, yes, I did. Not just for Rose's sake, but for my own. For the sake of the sort of plays I believe in. For the sake of the sort of plays Rose should act in.
Tom?
Yes, Avonia.
Tom Wrench?
Yes, Avonia Bunn?
Do you really and truthfully believe that if Rose played what's-her-name in that play of yours that you're forever on about, that she would get back all the old Rose Trelawney? And really would?
really and truly would be able to act again?
Well, Avonia, I...
No, Tom, don't stop me.
But I couldn't even try.
Well, when my mother died, you see, well, there was no one else but me, see. And she left me all she'd ever saved to put by for a rainy day, she said. £500 it was, and don't you dare tell 30 or...
Don't, I promise, Avonia.
Well, I put it by, and I thought that if I lent you the money, you could put your play on, and Rose would play what's her name?
Dora.
And then she wouldn't have to leave the profession and break her heart all over again.
But what about your rainy days, Vonia?
Well, I've got 30 now, but Rose hasn't got anybody, not anymore. And don't you dare laugh at me, Tom Riggs.
I'm not laughing, Vonia. I'm not laughing.
Ah, well, that's that then.
But, Vonia, if by some mad, remote chance we should become partners in this venture, where could we put my play on? Every manager in London, in England, has said it won't do.
Well, the other day, Ferdy and I were walking through the West End and I saw the old Prince's, and I thought...
The old Prince's?
Well, it is empty.
Oh, yes, it's been that for the last 20 years.
Don't throw wet blankets, Tom.
It would take more than wet blankets to clean that place. £200 would only just about remove the top layer. Then there'd be a deposit on account of rent, say, another £200, and with £100 balance for emergencies...
But do we have to have a balance for emergencies?
Well, we've got the emergencies without the balance. That's your £500 gone before we even start on the play. We need at least another 800.
Oh, Tom, how awful. How unfair. Who's got it?
Oh, Rothschild's got it. Her Majesty the Queen's got it.
I've got it.
Hmm?
Do you remember old Mr. Morphew of Duncan Terrace?
Yes.
He used to take a great interest in this all at the Wells. You read in one of your plays once and you told me he liked it. He has money.
Well, he has gout.
Gout. How lucky. That means he's at home. Will you run round to Duncan Terrace?
Dressed as a dragon?
Oh, nonsense. Wrench me not asking him to advance money on your clothes.
The clothes are the man, Vonia.
Oh, no, they're not, Tom Wrench. Oh, no, they're not. Well, don't stand there all day away to Duncan Terrace, Tom. Why didn't you think of Mr. Morphew years ago?
I can't be expected to write plays and think all at the same time, Vonia. I needed a manager. I needed you.
Yes, you did. I have to dance, for here's my chance to assist our Rose and greatly enhance the position of one whom I dearly love. This is all that she needs, a decisive shove. This may be the one supremely good turn of a Vonia Bun. Of a Vonia Bun.
Rose, what do you think, Martina? Sir William Gower.
Sir William? Oh, no.
Oh, it's no good, my dear. George tried to stop him at the stage door, but he pushed right past him. And now he's puffing his way over there. And I came to warn you, so you could get him.
No. Open it.
Oh, and a sweet young thing, Mr. Dawson.
Are you a relative?
No, I'm not a relative.
Go. My mind is not commonly a wavering one, Miss Trelawney. But it has taken me some time, months, to decide upon calling on you.
Won't you sit down?
My grandson, where is he?
Arthur?
I had but one.
Isn't he in Cavendish Square?
Isn't he in Cavendish Square? No, he is not in Cavendish Square, as you know well.
Sir William, I assure you...
Now, how often does he write to you?
He does not write to
me. Visit you?
I haven't seen him since that night. Why, he might be...
Ah, but he's not. He's alive. Arthur's alive and full of his tricks still. His great-aunt, Trafalgar, receives a letter from him once a fortnight, posted, as you see, in London.
May I, Sir William?
You may.
To reassure you as to my well-being, I cause this to be posted in London by a friend.
A friend?
He would never call me that.
I write to you, dear great aunt.
knowing full well that I can't write to my love, to my own dearest love, even to ask if she is well. So I write to you, dear great aunt, hoping perhaps you may plant some little seed in my grandfather's heart. How does he fare, I beg you tell? No doubt he may suppose I think only of Rose, but tell him how I think about him too, and want him so much to love her as I do. Well, that's all for today, dear aunt. If I could say what enchanted me about my Rose, I could compose more of a letter. Oh, if only you and my grandfather knew her better. I might yet be happy meanwhile. Can I ever forget her?
Your loving great-nephew, Arthur.
Read no more. Return it to me.
There, Sir William.
What's come to you? You're not so much of a vixen as you were.
No.
Less of the devil.
Sir William, I am sorry for having been a vixen. And for all my unruly conduct in Cavendish Square, I humbly beg your and Miss Gower's forgiveness. Huh.
Extraordinary change.
Aren't you changed, Sir William, now that you have lost him?
I?
Don't you love him now, the more?
Rose, have you seen
Queen? Ah, sir. Madam.
Oh, go away, Vonia, Sir Gower. Good day.
Yes, and these are the associates you would have tempted my boy, my grandson, to herd with.
Oh, that young lady doesn't live in that attire. She is principal boy in the pantomime.
And lured away by one of these harridans.
Now, look here, Sir Gower.
Madam.
There's nothing to stare at, Sir Gower. If you must look anywhere in particular, look at that poor thing. You've brought her to beggary amongst you. You've broken her heart, and what's worse, you've made her genteel. She can't act since she left your mansion. She can only mope about the stage with her eyes fixed like a person in a dream. Dreaming of him, I suppose, and of what it is to be a lady. At first she's put upon half salary, and then she gets the sack. The entire sack, Sir Gower. So there's nothing left for her but to starve or to make artificial flowers. Miss Trelawney I'm speaking of. Our Rose. Our Trelawney. Excuse me for interfering, Rose Ducking. Good day, Sir Gower.
Is this the case?
Yes. Fortune has turned against me, rather.
I am sorry, ma'am. I believe you've kept your word to us concerning Arthur. I grieve for your ill fortune.
My mother knew how fickle fortune could be to us gypsies. One of the greatest actors that ever lived warned her of that. Keen once warned her of that.
Keen?
Yes, Edmund Keen. My mother acted with him when she was a girl.
With Keane?
Yes.
My dear, I saw Edmund Keane. A young man then, I was quite different from the man I am now. Impulsive,
excitable, keen. Oh, he was a splendid gypsy.
I still have the crown that my mother wore as Cordelia to King's Lear.
You have?
Yes, and the order, and the sword he wore as Richard.
Great heavens!
He gave them to my father. I've always prized them.
King, Lord, bless us. How he stirred me. The visions he gave me. I tell you, when I saw him as Richard, he almost fired me with an ambition to... I was young then, and a fool. But
there's no fool like an old fool when he forgets what it is to be young. If he can't remember how he used to feel, the mighty illusions that seem to him real, the actors he'd follow with passionate zeal, the popular songs that were sung. If he can't remember, he's a fool.
There's no fool like a young fool who is unwilling to learn from the old. If she cannot learn that the old may be wise, and age isn't something to fear and despise, and sometimes her elders may open her eyes to knowledge as precious as gold. If she cannot learn that, she's a fool.
It seems that we are two fools, on that at least we appear to agree. Perhaps you can help me recapture the past.
Perhaps you can teach me some wisdom at last. But simply by talking,
we're learning so fast.
I wonder what makes you and me
draw closer together. Is it because we are fools?
Who's that? I must not. Where can I conceal myself?
Oh, yes. Wait a minute. Oh, behind this curtain. It's William.
Ah, yes. Yes, thank you, ma'am.
Come in.
Well, Rose, that is it. The final blow.
Not the sack. Oh, not you two.
Worse, Rose. Worse.
John, what's happened? Oh, Mr. Morphew, isn't he willing?
I don't know. He's dead.
No.
3 weeks ago.
Oh, what a chance he's missed.
What is it? Vonia Tom?
My play. My comedy. My youngest form. We can find a theatre. Vonia has offered to help. And you were to play the part of Dora. But we need another £800.
And we thought old Mr. Morphew would help us in the speculation.
Speculation? It's a dead certainty.
Oh, dead. Oh, poor old Mr. Morphew.
And they'll expect me to rehearse that dragon tomorrow with enthusiasm.
Your pardon, ladies. Sir.
Sir William Gower, Tom Wrench.
I have been an unwitting party, it appears, to a consultation upon a matter of business. Do I understand, sir, that you have been defeated in some project which would have served the interests of Miss Trelawney?
Yes, sir.
Sir, it would give me pleasure. It would give my grandson, Mr. Arthur Gower, pleasure to be able to aid Miss Trelawney at the present moment.
Oh, Sir William, would you like to hear my play?
Eh?
My comedy.
So you think I might be induced to fill the office you designed for the late Mr.
Morfu.
Morfu, eh?
No, sir.
Yes!
Read your play, sir. A chair. Are there no chairs here?
Here you are.
Ah, thank you, ma'am. Proceed, sir.
Life. A comedy by Thomas Wrench.
As I read my play and imagine the things they'll say, I'm regretting that they said they'd hear me. If they knew me, they'd find such a concept in my mind, but I'm sure they're too blind to get near me. Ah, well, that's life. That's life. They won't understand that the plot of the play I've planned isn't noble or grand, it's their own life. And I'm willing to bet what I read them they'll forget, for most people are set to disown life. Ah, well, that's life. That's life. They won't want to know when the characters that I show seem to come and to go as people do. And they'll fiercely resist when love that was once in a mist is now out in the open and true. Life is my play, and I pray there will come a day when the things that I say will excite them. Then I'll sweep all before, I'll be walking on no more. I'll be armored for war, and I'll fight them and succeed, surprise and delight them. And if I fail, oh well, that's life.
Mr. Wrench, if this piece of yours will serve to provide employment for Miss Trelawney, then I am willing to take up the financial burden. But I want no further communication with your gypsy crew. There is something in your play which disturbs me, something I wish to put from my mind. You call your comedy life, Mr. Wrench. It comes too near my life, sir. Too near my family. Too near my heart. What business has the theatre to do that?
But, Sir William, please, may we proceed?
You may.
Close life goes on. Plonia, life goes on.
Come, life goes on.
I believe our chance has come at last. And now life goes on. It's the moment we banked upon.
We must try to be never strong in your new play.
Let us go side by side into the world outside. Out there lies our guide to a true play. Out here lies life. Look round.
That's life.
Well, Thomas Wrench, this is it. The old Prince's Theatre. 100 years of tradition. And 20 years of cobwebs, dust, and bats. Must have been mad to think that £200 would clean up this mausoleum. 2,000, perhaps. 2 million. Folia, what have we done? Look, pull yourself together, Tom Wrench. There's no going back now. Dora, Gerald, Rose, Arthur, are you there? I know you can't answer me, not yet. You only exist here in my play. Oh, but wait. When the cobwebs have been swept from the flies, and the dust shaken from the curtains, when the walls have been scrubbed spotless, and those new actors, my actors, meet on this stage, then, oh, then...
Life is a place when this place is alive or dead. We shall pray what we say. We'll be silent. We'll be burning a page. We shall sweep away an age. Striking far from the stage. That is not a
ladies and gentlemen. We shall start our first rehearsal in 10 minutes' time. There is a coffee house in the street next to the stage door, but I shall want everyone on call in the green room from 10:15. Thank you. Mr. Palmer, can I have a word with you?
Yes, you can. I say, Mr. Denzel, who plays Gerald?
Gerald, Miss Brewster.
The man I have my scene with in the third act. The hero.
Oh, the young man from the country, I understand.
From the country?
He's coming up by railway this morning, Mrs. Gadd tells me, from Bath or somewhere.
Well, whoever he is, if he can't play that scene with me decently, my part's not worth rags. Tom?
Yes, Julia?
He's not here.
He will be, never fear.
Oh.
That tree should be further upstage, Mr. Palmer.
Oh, right, yes.
Have you read through your role, James?
Yes, Violet, it is confined to the latter half of the second act, so I shall steal away until I'm needed.
It affords you no opportunity.
Oh, mere fragment.
Well, but a few good speeches to a man of your stamp.
Well, this is so liney, Violet, so very liney. And what do you think the character is described as?
What?
An old, stagey, out-of-date actor.
Will you be able to get near it, James?
My dear sir.
That's all right, then.
Miss Brewster, Miss...
And you, what have they called you for if you are not in the play? They have not dared to suggest understudy.
They don't ask me to act at all, James.
Don't ask
Mrs.
you to?
Mrs. Gadd offers me the position of wardrobe mistress. Hush, hush, now.
Oh, let us both go home.
No, James, we've been idle 6 months, and I can't bear to see you without your watch and all your comforts about you.
Mr. and Mrs. Telfer, how nice to see you. Fancy our being together again, and in the West End.
Now tell me, my dear Rose, your lover in the play, which of these young sparks plays your lover?
Oh, a Mr. Gordon, but he has not arrived yet, I believe.
Mr. Belfer!
No, Telfer!
I think that's you, James.
Come on, look alive, Mr. Telfer!
Look alive? Look alive? May I remind you, my man, that...
Mr. Telfer, I am so glad you were able to join the company. I hope that the little part of Poggs appeals to you. It's only a sketch, of course, but there was nothing else quite in your...
Nothing? To whose share does the Earl fall?
Oh, Mr. Denzel plays Lord Paracourt.
Denzel? I've never heard of him. Will you get to me today?
We expect to do so.
Very well. Let me be called in the street.
Mrs. Telfer, I am so sorry there was no part I could offer you.
Mr. Wrench, if we are set to scrub a floor, and we may come to that yet, let us make up our minds to scrub it legitimately, with dignity.
Tom?
Yes, Bonia?
He's here.
Who, Arthur?
No, Sir William. What does he want? What should we do?
Sir William? Shh. The boy can't be here for another 5 minutes.
Tom Wrench? I feel sick.
Oh, I know.
Supposing the old man wants his money back?
Well, at least that would enable me to write a melodrama.
Excuse me, Mr. Wrench. Yes. Sir William Gower's at a stage door. He wishes to be allowed to watch the rehearsal.
To watch the rehearsal?
Yeah, he seemed very insistent, sir.
Oh, very well.
Oh!
Be quiet. Now, will you please have Mr. Jennings see him through the pass door and into the stage box? And Mr. Palmer, for goodness sake, give him a chair.
A chair? Your chair. Yes, Mr. Wrench.
Tom Wrench, have you gone mad?
Look, Vonia, sooner or later we must accept responsibility for our act.
There won't be any act if Sir William finds out what we've done.
Pull yourself together. Pull yourself together. Don't let him see you're worried. He is on his way.
Where is Mr. Gordon? He's extremely late, sir.
Standards in the theatre are in quite a state, sir.
Will you start rehearsal, or do you mean to wait, sir?
How can the action proceed without...
No, it's not a professional. It never would have been allowed to happen if I...
Pull yourselves together.
Pull yourselves together. Pull yourselves together and rehearse my play. Nothing can go right unless you pay attention. Follow my direction and your own invention. Use imagination and avoid pretension. Where's Miss Trelawney? Will someone call her?
Call for Miss Trelawney.
Call for Miss Trelawney.
Not an author who can brook delay.
Words are what he uses and he never minces.
More undistinguished of the man convinces.
Better be ready for entrance here at the Princess and help his precious play to go.
It's all for Rose, my darling Rose. It's all for
Rose.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tom. I didn't realize you were ready for me.
Ah, we will start, ladies and gentlemen, from the opening scene.
Beginners on stage, please.
Now, when the curtain rises, you, Rose, are seated here on a garden chair under an apple tree. You can see the church tower and the outlying houses of the village beyond the garden. Mm-hmm. You've been knitting, but now you've stopped, and the ball of wool falls from your lap and rolls across the grass. Mm-hmm. Peggy now enters from the house, that's right, Vonia, looks across the fields, turns to Dora, smiles, and shakes her head. Dora says...
Surely he can't have forgotten.
No one would dare to forget one of your mamma's invitations.
Mr. Gordon has arrived, sir.
Oh, good, thank
well,
you, Mr.
Well, I don't intend to...
Tell him to stand by.
Are you coming?
No, not yet.
Good. Now, Dora goes into the house, and she's perhaps singing to herself...
What might be singing, Tom?
Oh, anything. You're waiting for the man you've fallen in love with. Anything, we'll settle it later. Peggy watches her, then turns and waves to someone approaching across the fields. Are you ready for your entrance, Mr. Gordon?
Yes, Mr. Wrench.
Good. Now, you enter here.
Yes, I see.
All right?
Yes.
Good. Now, you see the ball of wool, cross and pick it up. Mm-hmm. Dora, this is where we hear you. Dora? And she enters. You hand her the ball of wool, Mr. Gordon, and she says...
Arthur, why are you here?
I'm trying to be what you are.
What I am?
Yes, a gypsy.
A gypsy? Oh, Arthur.
Oh. Lady of May, I'm all adoring. Suddenly love has set me free. My heart is soaring. Ever my love.
Grandfather, you here too?
What is going on, sir? What is this?
I... You and Rose are the last persons I expected to find here.
Nonsense.
Perhaps you both had already learnt from Mr. Wrench that I have become
A gypsy.
Not I. These persons have thought it proper for me to discover for myself this conspiracy.
Sir William, I beg you to understand that Miss Trelawney was, till a moment ago, as ignorant as yourself of Mr. Arthur Gower's doings, of his movements, of his whereabouts. Whatever conspiracy there has been, Sir William, is my own. To bring these two young people together again. To make them happy.
Forgive us, Sir William. Forgive us all. Oh, Sir William, why may not Arthur become someday a splendid gypsy?
Eh?
Like, don't you remember? They were your words.
Yes, sir. A gypsy of a different order from the old order which is departing. A gypsy of the new school.
Very well, Mr. Wrench. Let the rehearsal be resumed. I want to see what sort of a pair of gypsies they make. This Mr. Arthur Gordon and his Miss Trelawney.
Ideas. Let us get on with the rehearsal.
Good night, sir. Night, miss.
Sir Charles? Oh, Sir Charles.
Mrs. Wood, I trust you appreciated our humble entertainment.
Oh, yes, Sir Charles. It was lovely. But my eyes ain't so good these days, dear, and I can't read the small print on this handbill. Would you be a love and tell me who was who?
yes, of course. I'm delighted, Mrs. Wood. Here we are. Trelawney, a musical play adapted from the Commedietta by Sir Arthur Wing Pinero, by Messrs. Aubrey Woods, George Rowell, and Julian Slade.
Oh, yeah, I know all that.
Yeah, the persons portraying the various characters in the play were as follows. Theatrical folk. Mr. James Telfer, Mr. Peter Pratt. Ferdinand Gadd, Mr. Aubrey Woods. Augustus Colpoys, Mr. Ronnie Stevens. Tom Wrench, Mr. Gary Bond, Mrs. Telfer, professionally known as Miss Violet Sylvester, Miss Dillis Lay, Evonia Bunn, Miss Jan Waters, Mr. and Mrs. Mossop, Peter Tuddenham and Jane Wenham, Albert the Callboy, Master Alex Jennings, Mr. Denzel, Nigel Graham, Miss Brewster, Hilda Schroeder, Mr. Palmer, William Eagle, Miss Rose Trelawney, Miss Anne Mackay.
Oh, a very pretty girl.
The walking gentlemen and ladies were represented by Messrs. James Bryce, Mark Straker, and John Strickland. And Mesdames, Moya Leslie and Eileen Tully.
Oh, yeah. Go on.
The non-theatrical folk in the play were as follows. Vice-Chancellor Sir William Gower, Mr. Nigel Stock. Miss Trafalgar Gower, Miss Joyce Carey, Arthur Gower, Mr. Geoffrey Collins, Clara De Phoenix, Miss Carol Boyd, Captain De Phoenix, Mr. Clive Panto, Charles the Butler, Mr. Michael Bilton, and Mr. Eblett, Timothy Bateson.
Oh, yes, I like him.
The company was musically supported by the British Broadcasting Corporation singers. The music was conducted by Mr. John Owen Edwards, who, in association with Mr. Philip Edmonds, also penned the orchestrations, with vocal embellishments arranged by Mr. Neil Roden. The play was directed by Mrs. Christopher D'Souza and Ian Cottrell.
Well, very nice, too.
Jolly good.